Okay, so we were discussing last week, the Rambam was talking about what leads people to the ideas that that the malachim are physical, right? And that Olam Haba is a physical existence. So, yes, and he was saying that it basically stems from the average person's feeling or conviction that the real reality, the true existence, is physical. Okay, and to the average person, that which is not a goof is not real. Nothing is as real as the physical. Yeah, now what does that mean exactly, right? Right around says, "Shem lo yeh guf etzlam eino nimsa." And but the ones who are truly chachamim, they know the moface. Shekol nivdal min achomer hu yoser chazak b'metzias mi baal chomer. Ve'ein roi lomer yoser chazak. It's not even proper to say stronger. Oh, metzias ha nivdal hi ha metzias ha amitas. Mipnei shelo yasigehu echad me'ofnei hashinoi. Right, so that was the point we discussed, we started to talk about a little bit last week. That the different way of looking at what's considered a true existence and more real. So he's saying that's really what to the average person, they have a certain sense of that the physical is the true existence, and if it's not physical to them, it's not real. Yeah, and therefore that leads them to the belief that since we say that the Torah says there's malachim and there's olam haba and a nefesh, so they believe therefore in those things in a certain physical sense. Okay. I mean, the Rama mentions in the Mora also. He says the Torah speaks according to the language of man. It's in book 126. That is to say, expressions which can easily be comprehended and understood by all are applied to the Creator. Hence, the description of God by attributes, implying corporeality in order to express his existence, because the multitude of people do not easily conceive existence unless in connection with a body, and that which is not a body nor connected with a body has for them no existence. And then later on he explains because most people get confused between the imagination and knowledge. Okay. Let's be a little more. He says, and if he says, Vehem Asher his bor etzlam bimofes shashem eino guf alo koch beguf nezeh. So, for the real Chacham, he recognizes with a proof that there's no guf or koch and guf in by God, and that's why we say that God is the greatest existence, and so too any nivra, nivdal, meaning to say a malach or a seichel, that is really in truth in the greatest and the strongest existence. And it's more firm, it's more lasting than any goof. And that's why he says we believe that the malachim are not bodies, and that the b'nei olam haba are separated nefashos, meaning to say, sicholim, intelligences. וכאשר באנו רויוס על זה מן התורה, במאמרנו המכונה מור הנבוכים. And that's how we explain in the Mor Nevuchim. Yeah, the Rambam mentions in the Mor in book once in chapter 49. He says the angels are likewise incorporeal. They are intelligences without matter, but they are nevertheless created beings, and God created them, as will be explained below. In Bereishis Rabba would be the following remark of our sages: the angel is called the flame of the sword which turned every way. That's by the gate of Gan Eden, right? In accordance with the words, his minister is a flaming fire. So he says, because it says he uses the same word, flame. The attribute which turns every way is added because angels are changeable in form. They appear at one time as males, at another time as females. Now as spirits, now as angels. That's the Medrash. By this remark, they clearly stated that angels are incorporeal and have no permanent bodily form independent of the mind of him who perceives them. They exist entirely in prophetic vision and depend on the action of the imaginative power, as will be explained when speaking of the true meaning of prophecy. As to the words at another time as females, which imply that the prophets in prophetical visions perceive angels also in the form of women, they refer to the vision of Zechariah. Okay, fine. You know very well how difficult it is, this is the part I was thinking of, how difficult it is for men to form a notion of anything immaterial and entirely devoid of corporeality, except after considerable training. It is especially difficult for those who do not distinguish between objects of the intellect and objects of the imagination, and depend mostly on the mere imaginative power. So he says it's very difficult to really have an idea of an incorporeal being. It's just, it's not something, like we said many times, it's not something that you can really know through experience in the sense of, a sense type of an experience. It's by definition, beyond that mechanism of direct observation. And it's only possible, he's saying, to really understand basically that it exists. I don't know if you can really have an idea that you can just, put into an existing category in your mind. I mean, most things we think about, where we compare to things that we know, and, we can file them under the known, in some relation to the known. But that's the problem. If you're that type of a person, and that's what he means by you only thinking with your imagination, you don't distinguish between objects of intellect and objects of your imagination. So that means to say that he says they believe that all imagined things exist, or at least have the possibility of existing, but that which cannot be imagined does not exist and cannot exist. That's what he's describing. That's the people he's describing. Now, if a person feels he can't get some sort of a grasp on it in his mind, in some sort of an image, he feels it can't exist. Because he has to be able to relate to it as an object in some way. As opposed to what he's calling a objects of the intellect, means something that with your mind you can deduce must exist. But you can't ever really get a grasp on it. You can't necessarily contain it in some complete way, and equate it with something that you know from your in a sensory type of a way. Because what he's saying really is the people who believe in the imagination, is still very tied to the physical being real, but they can sort of, in the imagination, sort of have a perception of it. But if it's beyond perception, even in an imaginative way, they can't relate to it. They can't treat it as a thing. It's just an idea. It's too abstract. For persons of this class, he says, and the majority of thinkers belong to it, for persons of this class cannot arrive at the true solution of any question or at the explanation of anything doubtful. On account of this difficulty, the prophetic books contain expressions which, taken literally, imply that angels are corporeal, moving about, endowed with human form, receiving commands of God, obeying his words, and performing whatever he wishes according to his command. All this only serves to lead to the belief that angels exist and are alive and perfect, in the same way as we have explained in reference to God. Not the same thing, as we explained in a minute. If the figurative representation of angels were limited to this, their true essence would be believed to be the same as the essence of God, since in reference to the Creator, expressions are likewise employed, which literally imply that he is corporeal, living, moving, and endowed with human form. So the Rambam is saying that the Nevi'im describe Malachim, and the Torah describes Malachim, in a way that makes the knowledge of the fact that they exist true even to the average person. Okay? But even the average person, he's saying, everybody ultimately should realize that it's Dibra Torah Klasha B'nai Adam, and it's trying to give an idea of their existence that we can relate to, that we can sort of get something out of, but recognize at the same time that the true existence is something that that is a perfect type of an existence. But now he's saying a fantastic thing. He's saying if it would just use the same exact method as it does by God, then it would create some sort of an impression that they both have the same perfection. Because you can't describe the actuality of it. Right? It's just using descriptive terms to say that there is a perfect existence. Right? So therefore, how does the Torah avoid this idea of equating the perfect existence of the angels and of God? He says, it was thereby shown that the existence of God is more perfect than that of angels. I skipped a line. In order, therefore, to give to the mind of men the idea that the existence of angels is lower than the existence of God, certain forms of lower animals were introduced in the description of angels. It was thereby shown that the existence of God is more perfect than that of angels, as much as man is more perfect than the lower animals. Nonetheless, no organ of the brute creation was attributed to the angels except wings. Without wings, the act of flying appears as impossible as that of walking without legs. For these two modes of motion can only be imagined in connection with these organs. The motion of flying has been chosen as a symbol to represent that angels possess life because it is the most perfect and most sublime movement of the brute creation. Men consider this motion of perfection to such an extent that they themselves wish to be able to fly, in order to escape easily what is injurious and to obtain quickly what is useful, though it be at a distance. For this reason, this motion has been attributed to the angels. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, it goes into that. And that's also what you want to say is in Mice and Merkava, he uses the face of the animals. So it's an interesting Rama, saying that the average, that there should be, that the Dibra Torah Kloshim B'nai Adam uses expressions, physical expressions, to convey the notion that there is an existence that is perfect. You have to use these expressions to denote that there is an existence, but to make it clear that even though neither one of them can be described by words in reference fully to what we know, they're beyond existences that we're aware of, their perfection exceeds the physical, it used expressions of lower, of animals, with regards to malachim, in certain cases, to indicate that they are of a lower perfection. Very interesting, Rama. Yeah. So what do we mean over here by perfect and more perfect and more real and more existing and stronger and all these things in the physical than in the non-physical and in the physical? Yeah. So, yeah. So when we're saying the physical thing is less real, like he says, less strong and less real. So what do we mean? And we mean to say like this, that it's, what do we mean by saying something is real? Right? Start using the same words over and over again now. That means to say that it really is present. It really exists. It's there. It's something. Hold on. I'll get out of it. I'll crawl out of it in a minute. Okay. So this table, I could say, well, yeah, it's real because as opposed to like an imaginary table that if I put a book on, it would fall, the book would fall. So there really is something here. It's present. I can. Existing? Okay. Now the Rambam is saying is like this, saying, so now what if something though were susceptible to, so we're gonna judge its reality and its by its presence, its manifestation, its existence here. So say that let's say I'd ask you, is the table more real or is the wood more real? Does that have a meaning? Is there a meaning to that?
They're both present.
But is there a meaning to saying which is more real? Is there a sense that makes any sense? Like I say, well, I could break up this table and the wood would still be here. Right? So its existence, or its the idea of it being here, is more real by the wood than by the table. Because the table is only here accidentally, I could say, because of a certain configuration, and because of certain causes, like people, that's the only reason the table is here. But it's not truly here like in an intrinsic way. It's only here accidentally because of circumstances, right? But the wood has fewer circumstances that make its existence that its existence is dependent upon. So I'll say that the table, whose existence is dependent on the presence of the wood, is more of a dependent type of a thing than the wood itself, right? And I could say the wood itself is dependent, is less real than the molecules that make it up. Because the molecules would continue to exist even though the wood was broken up into pieces really small. And then maybe the atoms of carbon and hydrogen, you know what I'm saying? So in a certain sense, when I want to know, so what is really the world made out of? What's the world really made out of? The person would ask that question. Would that be a sensible question? Yes. Because it means to say, what are the existences that must be? That's what a person really wants to know. So this building, this table, this recorder, they're not the true existences of the world. They're just circumstances that came together that produced this thing. So even in the sense, even in the vague sense of existing, you know, in that vague term, we have to, you know, we can sort of get a sense of what we mean and say, when I say something is more reality, when I say something is real, it means it exists. But in truth, things exist in different ways. Certain things have an existence that's dependent, and certain things have an existence that is intrinsic or less dependent. And when I say what is more real, I mean what partakes more of true existence, and I mean by that what requires less circumstances for its existence to be present. So when I take it from the most, you know, refined, produced object, I can see clearly that that's not a real, like for instance, say, people say beauty is not a real thing. It fades. Right, but your personality is more real than your looks, because your looks change. So we say, oh, as we sort of, we have an idea, we're searching for what's real, and we have a somewhat intrinsic idea that real is existence, and more real means that the existence is permanent, not just some passing fancy. Right? So, in that sense, when we keep going back and back and back, anything whose existence really is a manifestation of something else, we'll call that something else the truer existence. And the thing that presents itself as just a circumstance, right? So the table is from the wood is from the molecules are the atoms, and we can keep going down and down and down, right? And as you go further and further down, you're really getting to things that are less and less dependent on particular physical circumstances. And the Rambam's idea is that eventually you'll get back to an idea of a cause that doesn't partake of any change. Because change is really our indication that its existence is not absolute, and therefore it's less real than anything else. Right? It's manufactured. It's not truly part of the nature of reality. It's somewhat a produced thing. Produced automatically means it's not an intrinsic idea in reality. So when you the Chacham, he says, in his mind can keep stripping away and finding the deeper and deeper causes until he realizes that the ultimate cause does not partake of any of the manifestations that we see at all and is really behind all of it and completely different from it. Right? And that's the ultimate mitzias. That's the ultimate mitzvah itself. And it's not affected by any of the ofone hashinui. And that's exactly what we mean by when we say it is the truest, strongest existence. But to the average person, they look at existence by, to them what's more real is what is more easily observable. Experience. I know it, I feel it, I sense it. That's don't give me any of these ideas. I want to believe when I see it, kind of thing, right? So that's what I'm saying. We really are, the Chacham really is the other way. He recognizes that what is really the ikar of a person, it's not his body, it's what is behind it all. What is really, it's really the faculty that's not totally on his physicality. The part that's incorporeal. Now the truth though is, even for the Chacham, it's really not possible to get to the point where you can sense in a concrete way the abstract idea. That's something that Sajigon mentioned. Remember, David did a while ago in the doubt and certainty. So he says people complain that that the abstract idea is difficult. He says, but that's the whole point of it, you know, that it's not the perceptible. The whole idea is of abstraction is you go beyond the perception. So you can't be upset at the end that you have something that you can't perceive. That's exactly what you're doing. It's the nature of the inquiry. But But to the average person, it's an exceedingly difficult thing. And the truth is, it's exceedingly difficult to everybody. I mean, in the average person, he's saying it's not doable. But still, the person who is trained and has some experience with it can at least recognize that there are logical arguments that point to something like that. But you know, it's interesting. Like Bizmana Zeh, I guess if you would try to bring a mushal to an average person, you could show him that that really there are what we have. We do have somewhat non-physical forces that we can sort of. I mean, I guess we can argue about it, whether they're physical or not. Like, you know, electricity.
Neutrons.
I mean, you have a wave. You have an electronic. It's more powerful than. You can send a signal over thousands and thousands of miles, or through buildings and. The physical, something that would be built, something that would be more physically imposing, would have less power than non-physical energy wave. Ultimately, everything comes down to, if you keep going back and back and back, everything comes down to a non-physical idea of energy. I mean, what is it exactly? It's not really. Nobody, I don't think anybody really knows what it is. But they're all moda, know that in the very, very, very beginning, it was just whatever they're considering pure energy, and finally cooled and coalesced into matter. I mean, E equals mc squared is, means that there is such an idea that the physical can be converted into some non-physical energy form. Obviously, it's very difficult stuff, but the point is. Right, but the non-physical of the burning is what? The fire, the light. That's the like the heat is. Yeah, it's true. It's also radiation. But anyway, but the point is that. It's maybe it's something that you can use to express the idea that sometimes the more refined and more less bulky, less massive, doesn't mean it has less of a reality. I'm not saying that the soul is an electromagnetic phenomenon, but there is an idea that the ultimate reality is really not these physical manifestations. There is some deeper reality behind it. Yeah. Well, no, it's just the mushal. It's like my father told me that when they first came out with when they first started using radiation, so people were not afraid of it because they felt that you can't see it. Doesn't feel like you're being bombarded by deadly things. You know, in the imagination, it hadn't taken hold of the imagination yet. These ideas of waves and I don't know if you ask maybe your parents or grandparents, they used to, it's mind-boggling today, but they used to go in the shoe store, and they would try on shoes and put their feet in a movie radiation machine. And you could see your toes inside of your shoe. Ever hear that? Yeah. Get the perfect fit. Of course you radiate your foot like crazy. But they didn't, it was just, felt safe. They didn't feel like anything's happening to you. Yeah. So, in that sense, now of course a scientist could have told you it's a dangerous thing, but in that sense, the Chacham knew it al pi svara, that you're, it's high energy particles. Yeah, yeah, she didn't know, right? She didn't know what it was that was making those things glow, you know. But you know, the average person, he goes by how things feel. But you can show him now, you see that we now know demonstrably that that's not right. There are these invisible things, and they are the most, could be the, you know, extremely dangerous. All right, anyway, but it is just a muscle, because it is still a physical thing. So what's interesting is, so we're going further than Ram, so he says that it's not a problem, it's not considered a problem in the Ikaram if a person believes that Malachim are physical, or that Olam Haba is a physical type of a thing. He says as long as they don't think about God that way. He says it wouldn't bother him. And he says, and there's no shortage of drushas that there's no shortage of the plain shot of drushas that they could use to try to refute us. And if they would think that we're wrong when we say that the malachim are not physical and Allah, it doesn't bother us even if people say we're completely wrong. And we are foolish for believing this, and that wouldn't bother us. He says, because we know why they're doing this, and certainly there's no shortage of midrashim that they could use against us. Just like there are psukim, that the plain shot of them seems to say that Hashem has a goof. Oval kishehis amsu harayos hasichlios. But when we understand the intellectual proofs that make these plain pshatim impossible, then we know that the reality is, like we say, dibur Torah klushim bnei adam. So the plain pshat of a lot of things would seem to indicate like the people think. But we know, because of the intellectual proofs, that it can't be, and therefore, that's why Chazal say dibur Torah klushim bnei adam. Elisha mofsim ahem, the only thing is these proofs, these people would not understand. Okay? And all of the intellectual rayos about malachim and olam haba, that there is no physicality, they wouldn't believe those either, they wouldn't understand those either. And to the point that and also we have the rayas that the malachim and the olam haba is not physical, so therefore we have to say also that it's a mashal when Chazal talk about it that way, but they also wouldn't understand those rayas. Okay. And he's saying that they only believe in these things. They only believe that these things are known because of a Kabbalah from the Torah, and there is no intellectual way. There's no way that they could be understood from just from philosophy. Okay. Not about the existence of malachim, and not about the eternity of the soul. Okay. Kemosha Omar Misha Yachsho Shiagia Liadias Hamitas Beregas Bideos Haheim Hachalushos Rifuan Habakosha Beheder Hachochmos Kulan Vihahistapkos Bipshute Hamikubalos. Trying to explain a little further about these people, saying that they believe that there's no eon to these ideas. It's just like we accept them, that they're told to us from Kabbalah, and that also that there's no problem in understanding. You can understand them in a second. You can understand these are the people who believe you can reach the truth like in a second. With weak minds and weak effort and without any intelligence, and just by being satisfied with the simple interpretations of Pesukim. In other words, they don't believe that the things that we have from Kabbalah have an intellectual reality. They're just like, you know, given over plain shot facts. He says, and it's like they never heard the Chachamim say that in the Torah there's a Nigla and a Nistar. And it's called Nistar, right? Sisrei Torah, they're the secrets of Torah. And it's Ki'ilu Hein Lo Omru Klal B'Sisrei Torah Dover. To them it's like there's no such thing as Sisrei Torah. Everything is just plain and simple. Okay. Yeah. And he says, we already explained this in the Marvel about this thing. But it's like he says, you know, it's like the Ram says many times, like in the flame chat of the Midrash and all those other things, that there's a group of people who don't have any intellectual any appreciation for the reality of the of ideas, and to them there is no reality to these things other than the fact that we're told that they exist, and therefore there's no existence other than the way that they're told. So they can't be hinting at anything deeper, because there's no such thing as depth. And to them, he says, to them it's like they don't believe in Sisrei Torah. They never heard of Sisrei Torah. Well, what's Sisrei Torah? To them, everything is just Hakol Hakhi Pashut. Everything is just simple the way it is. Okay. It's interesting. The Rambam has a very, very vivid description of this type of a person in the sixth chapter in the second book. He says, he's talking about Malachim here again. And I'll just jump into the middle. He says, he says, say to a person who is believed to belong to the wise men of Israel that the Almighty sends his angel to enter the womb of a woman and to form there the fetus. He will be satisfied with the account. He will believe it and even find it in it a description of the greatness of God's might and wisdom. Although he believes that the angel consists of burning fire and is as big as a third part of the universe, yet he considers it possible as a divine miracle. But tell him that God gave the seed a formative power which produces and shapes the limbs, and that this power is called angel, or that all forms are the result of the influence of the active intellect, and the latter is the angel, the prince of the world, frequently mentioned by our sages, and he will turn away, because he cannot comprehend the true greatness and power of creating forces that act in the body without being perceived by our senses. Okay? So again, same thing. You tell a guy there's an amazing miracle. God sends a fiery angel into a woman's womb, and the angel is the size of one-third of the universe and burning fire, but it doesn't harm her, and it fits in because it's a miracle. He'll say, that's fantastic. I love it. It's amazing. That's glory of God, right? You tell him that with Chachma, the universe was created to allow forces, invisible forces, to shape the seed and the cell into a human form, and that's the angel that we're referring to. He's not interested. Not interested. Okay. So today too, I mean, people, but it's the same thing. In other words, there's a difference. There is the person who doesn't, the person who has a religious desire, there's a certain type of a person who they glory in the mystical, right? And they're looking for things that are not understood. And that's where they find the greatest, you know, spiritual ecstasy. Right? As opposed to appreciating the and seeing Chachma. They want to I have to try to define it over a little bit. I mean, like the Rambam is defining his thing. That they're not interested in Chachma. That's what the Rambam is talking about, these people. They're not really intellectual, but yeah.
Because it's easy.
Right.
So all you do is read what happened and you come. There's no speaking, there's no effort, there's no understanding.
For them, right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Now, as he's saying, they want to feel that they're partaking of the greatest things, but they really are not interested in putting in that kind of an effort, and they're not really, you know, it's like they're not willing to work hard, but they want to feel that they're involved in the greatest things too, and in the greatest religious recognitions too. So they take the plain shot of things, and they say the not understanding and the mystery itself is the most amazing thing. So I'm doing it. But they don't want to hear about the Chachma and that there's depths that you need to really work on and understand a lot of things for. That's not in line with, that's not going to be a satisfaction that's in line with their inclinations and their abilities. And nobody wants to feel that they're excluded from the ultimate thing. So it's like the Rambam in the Mora we were doing a couple years ago. He says, you know, the metaphysics is something that people can't just jump into. A lot of people want to feel that they know something, and they don't want to put in the effort. So they wind up, you know, hearing something and taking it in the wrong way. But and that's why he says you shouldn't study metaphysics. You know, until you're ready, and there's a whole order to it. But the similar thing over here: a person wants to feel that he's in the biggest ideas, and so therefore, to him, it's going to become the mystery of the great thing. And but it really comes from the problem that he doesn't really perceive the greatness of Chachma. Does not perceive the greatness of Chachma. So he takes the greatness to be the astounding quality of the thing. The astounding nature of it. That's what's so great about it. That, like he says earlier, the fiery angel can do all this and not harm the woman, or that there's going to be some fantastic imagery of what's going to be in Olam Haba. Or something like that really captures the imagination and is beyond the mundane and beyond the realm of what is known in this reality. And in other words, everybody wants to exceed the commonplace. Everybody knows that the commonplace is not really where the greatness of any subject lies. But the Chacham sees the wisdom that's behind it, and he sees the value of the Chachma that produces it. But the average person who doesn't, so to him, he has to look for fantastical things that are not possible in this world, and say that's really it. We're all seeing as a shadow, as a mask, as a little show, but the reality is that there are these fantastic things that are going up in heavens, or that's going to come, and the whole order is going to be different. And to him, that's really what is amazing. So that's what I'm saying. That's the problem with these people. But these people can't. It's a whole description. So for them, though. He's saying the idea of malachim is really out of reach. So they have to they have to view it all in a physical sense. All right.
Obviously,
you go ahead.
Their attraction to it because it's easier. It's like they want to partake of something great.
Yeah.
So it's just like.
It is. It's a form of. It is a certain laziness. But it's, I mean, it could be a lot of reasons. Right.
You see similar, even Nazis, fantastical things that are just mushrooms, like a real miracle. You also feel more impressed by that than Rita itself.
Correct.
But that doesn't have the laziness. It's the same type of draw.
It's that, it's, well, it has to do with the underlying thing that Ram is saying over here. That they're, that they're, in, they're not, they don't perceive the reality that's underneath existence. They don't perceive the reality in the sense of the cause of existence. They don't have that idea. So to them, what is more real is the physical. So if something can alter what they see to be, you know, physically stable, that must be a physical. That must be a great thing. But to split the ocean, that's great because that's. It's more powerful than the physical that they see.
On drugs.
What's that?
On drugs.
No. I mean, some people do that. I mean, they do say that's the imagination thing. That's what I'm talking about, the imagination thing. They feel in the imagination they can see things. If they are on a certain, you know, hallucinations, they can see different realms of reality, you know, open up different views. But that's also, They're not perceiving chachma. They're not understanding the idea of an intellectual perception. So they think that you need to, that imagination is really the right perception, and they can't have these crazy imaginations in the normal state. So they think that a drug is going to make them get a different perception of reality, a deeper perception. But it's not. It's just an imagination. Yeah. Maybe that's the right way to put it. In other words, the Rambam is trying to explain that to the Chacham, what the greatness of the Malach is, it's an idea, it's a non-physical existence that's behind the physical realities. I mean, exactly his whole idea of Malach, that's in that same chapter I read you with the fiery angel. But he's saying the Chacham recognizes that there's a necessity of an existence of a non-physical forces that are behind what we perceive, and those are the truer existences. But to an average person, what makes the Malach a truer existence? That he can defy the physical reality. You understand? Like I was saying before, the manifest simple reality is not, everybody agrees that's not the ultimate thing. It's something that's greater than it. But the Chacham looks for the underlying causes and recognizes that the physical reality we perceive is a manifestation of deeper, truer existence. Okay? But to the non-Chacham, he'll have to say what's greater than the reality that we perceive? Something that's also physical but can defy reality, like Superman. Right? Superman is greater because he can defy the reality. He can fly, he can do all sorts of things, right? So that's the idea of a malach, really, to the average person. It's something that's beyond the constraints of mere man who's stuck in the constraints of the physical. The malach is greater than we are because he can defy the physical. He can fly, he can float, he can walk through walls, whatever he can do, right? But that's because they can't get out of the physical reality. So all they have is the physical reality we know and something stronger than this physical reality. Right? And then the Malach is, you know, what's considered really to be able to defy supernatural, that's what they call it, like not confined by the regular nature of things. Whereas the Chacham looks for what's underlying the reality, and he recognizes the greatness when we talk about that God creates with Malachim. It means to say that there's a whole system of non-physical realities that bring about and produce the physical that we see. As opposed to the non-chacham is going to look at it like little guardian angels or whatever it is that can, you know, rush ahead of you and push things out of the way or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? It's like against reality or causing reality. But if you don't have the idea of a non-physical cause, then the only thing greater than the reality you have is going to be some other physical force that's stronger than our reality. I mean, that's like all of children's, you know, Harry Potter, all this stuff is that type of greatness. You know, the physical, because there's nothing other than physical, but for some reason it's physical and he can be beyond the physical. Right. So that's what the Rambam is explaining. The average person is trapped in that whole way of thinking simply because he has to agree that there's something greater. But he's unable to perceive the idea of greater being less, right? Being not physical. So the only alternative he has is to go this way. And he'll even say that we're wrong because we don't believe in something that can really fly and something that can really, you know, go through whatever it is. Right? Okay. It's very appealing because there's also the idea of this projection. It's a wish. We wish we could do all of these things. But who wishes to be a non-physical cause behind some... you can't live vicariously through that type of thing. You can get all wrapped up in the fantasy of a malach, that, you know, in the sense that do things that you wish you could do, but it doesn't capture... But that's, again, imagination. Imagination. It captures the imagination. These things don't. They can't even be contained in the imagination.